Hello, everybody, and welcome to the When Hard Work Beats Talent podcast. Today, we have a special guest, and I'm so excited to bring this guy to you because I've known him for the better part of 20-plus years. He's all around a good, badass dude. He does a bunch of in the recruiting world, and with June 15th coming up in a few days, this is the hot topic right now coming in for all you juniors. So with that said, our guest today is Teague Moore. He has 20 years of experience in the college coaching world, 15 as a head coach, 5 as an assistant coach on staffs through his time at Oklahoma State, Pittsburgh, Oklahoma, Harvard, Clarion, and finishing out at American University. As an athlete, he was unstoppable in my opinion. He's won 9 national titles over the course of his high school and college careers. That includes the 1998 NCAA title for Oklahoma State University. He is also a junior freestyle champ, which, Wes, I know you have no idea what that means. But in the terms of high school wrestling, if you're a junior national freestyle champ or Greco champ, you're pretty damn good. You go to Fargo, you beat everybody, you're a national champ. You're amazing. And a lot of colleges recruit off that. And he went to the best college, in my opinion, at that time and still today for wrestling. However, he was also a University World Champion in 2000 over in Tokyo. He was a 2002 U.S. Open freestyle champ. A lot of other titles and cool shit. With that said, Teague Moore, you also coached one of my and best all-time favorite wrestlers in the world.
Who's that?
David Terrell.
Yeah.
So, yes,
David
I think
Josh
on your
Brown.
Yeah, on your bio, you have a picture of one of them. It looks like Josh.
Yeah, that was David.
That was David? Yeah, David, which also came to Dixie's Jiu-Jitsu place, Legacy Martial Arts, and did a two-day seminar.
Wow,
so
awesome.
She had a fun time. So Teague, welcome to the podcast and thank you for taking time out of your schedule.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. I'm honored to be on with you guys. I'm excited to do this and share some of my past experiences with you guys.
Yes, we are excited as well. So with every podcast, and I say every loosely, this is literally our second one.
Everyone.
We're at 100%.
Yeah.
So we're gonna start with rapid fire questions. Okay, so
all right.
What is one hidden talent that you have?
I can do extremely hard physical things for an extended period of time.
Like?
So give us an example, yeah.
Ran a marathon last summer, because I needed to check that off the list. You know, as an athlete cutting weight, a lot of wrestlers cut weight, especially back in the old days when we did night before weigh-ins, right? So cutting 10, 12 pounds a day of weigh-ins was not, that was fairly common. Here's a recent one that just happened. I live in Laurel, Maryland. My girlfriend and I, we have an acre and a half, and she wanted a fence built because she's got some goats. So, of course, I get a small dingo so that I can dig all the fence post holes. There are 82 of them, right?
Right.
Me not thinking, I was the only one here that weekend. And so I get going and I realize, oh my gosh, this is going to take me like 4 days. But instead I stayed on the dingo as long as the gas would allow and knocked out the 82 fence post holes in like, I don't know what it was. It must've been about nine and a half hours that day.
Gracious.
I think most people would have stopped and taken a break, but I realized afterward, and it was a hot day. It was like 92 degrees. Like I realized afterwards, normal people probably would have taken a break, went rested during high noon, but I didn't. I just kept plowing through all day. So
have you always been able to do that?
Yeah, as a little kid, one of my older brothers, my brother Terry has run every Pittsburgh marathon. That's why I ran the marathon last year. He's run every Pittsburgh marathon. So he's up to like number 40 or 41, whatever they've done. Gosh. He's ran every Pittsburgh marathon. And as a young kid, he used to put me on, at 10 years old, the first time he put me on a bike, we did a 50-mile ride at one point, and then that led to essentially a 100-mile ride. So I was 10 and 11 years old. Doing these monster bike rides. I didn't realize at the time that you have a choice to say no. My brother would always say, do you want to go do this? We're going to go for a long ride. I was like, yeah, sure. Jump on the bike. And next thing you know, you're on there for six, seven hours.
Wow.
So
there's one place that you've been that you'll never go back.
Ooh, mentally or physically?
Either. Or both.
Ooh, it sounds bad, but mentally, I never want to go back to the state I was in in my previous marriage, mentally, right? Physically, probably my 2002 weigh-in for the U.S. Open. That was an ugly, ugly physical place to be because I was like 18 over leading up to the U.S. Open. And here was the end result. Daniel Cormier, Mark Munoz, literally put me on their shoulder and walked me like a mile to the weigh-ins. Like I was just a puddle of goo. And they just put me on their shoulders and walked me over to weigh-ins and then piled me up on the scale. And I ended up making the weight. So physically, I would never, ever, ever, ever want to go back to that.
Holy moly. So, T, you've traveled a lot of places. Let's do a follow-up on that question. You've traveled a whole lot of places across the world. Where is one place in the world you would never want to go back that you've been to?
I'd probably say Cuba, and that was, I mean, it was a fun experience. It was a neat experience, but at that time, Cuba was, I can't remember what year that was. I want to say it was like 2003, and Cuba was just not, it just didn't appeal to me. It was neat to kind of see how things happen. Not a good place to live, which is contrasting to like, I went to Iran in 2001. This was pre-9/11 and competed in a city called Mashhad. We spent a week there. We flew into Tehran and then we trained there for a couple days and then we ended up flying into Mashhad. And that was a cool experience in a place that I think most Americans would be like, I don't want to go there or go back there. But the Iranian culture was awesome because they love wrestlers. The country was absolutely beautiful. Like when we went to Mashhad, it was like a lush green, kind of like a Pennsylvania. Part of Iran, and you normally don't think of Iran like that. Like when I thought of it going into it, I was thinking kind of desert Middle East, but that part of Tehran was much different.
Interesting. Very. I have heard from several wrestlers that overseas, internationally, wrestlers are treated as kings, if you will. Like royalty. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah. And I've thought about why that is. I think in most cultures, wrestling is appreciated because it's the simplest form of sport for mankind, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you think of most places, they're not going to build a hockey rink,
right?
If you're talking the whole globe, right? Sometimes it's hard to build soccer fields, but wrestling, you just need another person that you maybe dislike a little bit, and you got a wrestling match.
Yeah.
Right? So anybody can do it. Mm-hmm. You don't even need a mat. You can do it on sand, dirt, right?
Anywhere.
Yeah. You can do it anywhere. So when you become good at it, right, they hold you in high regard. And whether that's like, if you studied like Mongolian grass wrestling, like those guys are treated literally like kings in their country. In Africa, there's certain countries in Africa where their wrestlers, their fighters are held in like the highest regard. So it's only fitting, I think, that we finally figured it out with the UFC and now we hold wrestlers in this country in high regard. It took us a while to get here, but finally here. Yep. Respect it.
And we are, which is nice. What is your guilty pleasure?
If we're talking like foods, it's I make a homemade grilled pizza that I don't use a regular red sauce. I do my own. It's a cranberry sauce with some garlic and some other things added in, and I grill it. That would probably be like my biggest guilty, because every time I make it, I always make it and I'm like, okay, this is a big enough pie that I'm gonna have this for three meals. And then 30 minutes later, I'm like, no, like, that was a bad idea. But that's probably my one guilty pleasure.
There you go. Well, nice. Who's the most surprising person to have an impact in your life or on your life?
Surprising? I don't know if it, I mean, my family, but that's not surprising. Like, I come from a big family, so my parents, super supportive. If it's outside of my family, it's Father Bob Schlitt, who was our priest at Oklahoma State. Probably one of the most challenging times in my life. Father Schlitt was really good to us as the rest. We had a lot of Catholics on the team at that time at Oklahoma State. And he did a really good job of me, especially like kicking me back in bounds when I went out of bounds. He did a really good job of kind of sideswiping my head and get me back on course. I went through some tough stuff while I was at Oklahoma State. My dad passed right at the beginning of my sophomore year unexpectedly from a heart attack. He had a heart attack, and they tried to do a triple bypass, and he didn't make it out. So at 20 years old, that was unexpected and pretty rough. I was fairly close with my dad. He was actually living in Stillwater during my freshman year, planning to come back down my sophomore year, but he ended up passing. So Father Schlitt had a big role to play in my life at that time, and that was completely unexpected.
Nice.
Yeah. Father Schlitt.
What is the, and this will go into what you just said, but what is the hardest thing you've had to overcome?
Well, time frame, it was August of 2020 through probably January of 21. In August of 2020, I found out that I was being investigated at American University. It ended up leading to my termination, right? And it was during COVID, so I wasn't allowed to talk to anybody. When they called me and said, "You're being investigated," they said, "This is a Title IX investigation, so you can't talk to anybody. You can't talk to any of your coworkers about it. You can't talk to your team about this." It was like they locked you up, put you in a closet, and then you find out what the results were. They go do their investigation. So as that was going on, I went through a rough divorce, and that divorce started in that same time frame. My mom passed away in December of that year. So really? It was like bang, bang, bang. Loss of career, loss of marriage and kids, loss of my mom, right? Mm-hmm. Like in 4 months, it was all gone. And so as I'm like trying to cope with it and deal with it, I'm reading all this stuff, and they're like, toughest things to go through in life. Here's the top three. And I'm like, man, they're all coming at me in 4 months. So I would say getting through that 4 months was probably the toughest thing that I've ever had to go through.
Mm-hmm. And that's a whole, yes, it whole was. Bunch. And I remember talking to you about that during that time. You just, you never went into details, but I could just tell that it had you definitely rattled a little bit. I definitely believe. Yeah, I definitely believe you came out better for it.
Thanks.
You're doing great right now, T. And
thank you.
It's awesome to see, you know, because I don't think you would have the impact on the young kids that you can today if it weren't for that. You may still be at American having an impact, but you may not be doing what you're doing now either.
Yeah.
Which I think kids need that.
Too. Right. I appreciate you saying that. That means a lot. Having gone through that time frame, I did a podcast, I guess it was about a year ago, and it was solely focused on that. And there, I didn't realize it as I was going through it, but there's so many people that go through these things, and a lot of times people don't talk about it, right? Loss mm-hmm. of a career, unexpected, unchosen, that can be life altering. So yeah. If there's anybody out there that's going through that, I feel for you. There's people that feel for you. Reach out and get as much help as you can. You'd be shocked at how many people understand it, but maybe never talked about it, and they maybe never told anybody what they went through. Divorce is extremely tough. Like over half of the American population go through it. So if you're going through a rough, ugly divorce, there's people out there that have been through it. I can almost 100% say without a doubt, it's not all your fault, right? Talk to somebody about it. And then the coaching aspect of it, like, you know, having the impact on the kids that I have now, I have a much different perspective.
Right.
And to help lead kids where they're going into their college choice, I think now I've got a much different perspective that I can pass on to them and hopefully better equip them for their journey.
Awesome. Let's start from the beginning. Where are you from? Siblings, parents, growing up? What did you get on in wrestling? When did you realize, holy moly, pretty good at wrestling? I think this is something I want to really focus in on. Did you play other sports? Talk about going through growing up.
Okay. So born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the youngest of seven kids. My parents, my mom and dad actually had 10. They lost twins, stillbirth. That would have been the oldest. And then there was another one that they lost, which would have been above my brother, Ty. I played other sports growing up. I did soccer. Got beat up by my brothers. I don't know if that's a sport, but I participated in that sport a lot. Road bikes, not competitively, but I did a few races on a road bike. Did triathlons as a kid. And really, like, all of that was just, like, our family. My mom and dad had a rule. Seven kids, right? Mom stayed at home. Dad worked for the post office. And their rule was you have to be doing something throughout the year at all times. If you want to change seasons and go to different sports, we're all for it. But you got to be involved. So I, like, ran cross country in the fall, wrestled in the winter, in the spring, would do soccer, do some other sports until it was, like, cross country, wrestling, high school season, freestyle and Greco summer season, right? And then that became 9 months of my life of wrestling. A lot of people don't know this, but I had older brothers that wrestled. My brother Terry wrestled throughout high school until he was diagnosed with scoliosis. I had a brother Tommy that wrestled at Appalachian State in 1980 through 83. My brother Ty was a four-time Pennsylvania State champion, wrestled at University of North Carolina from 90 through 95. I have two sisters, my sister Colleen, who's a registered nurse. She swam in high school and ran and those sports. My sister Tina was a gymnast and a cheerleader. She went to UPJ, Pitt Johnstown, graduated summa cum laude. So big family. Mom and dad always challenged us to, like, do everything. Traditional Catholic family. So, like, everything we did was rooted around, like, did you go to church? Do you need to go to confession, right? Those sort of things, that sort of upbringing. When I was choosing where to go to wrestle in college, it was 1994. John Smith was the biggest name, you know, in the sport of wrestling. So I got the opportunity to go and wrestle for Coach Smith in Oklahoma State. So my college years, four straight years at Oklahoma State, I never redshirted, which is pretty rare nowadays. It doesn't take you 5 years or longer to graduate. But Eric Guerrero and I went into Oklahoma State in 1995, wrestled four straight years together because we both had aspirations of making an Olympic team, of which he did in 2004. At the 2000 Olympic trials, I ended up third. And at the 2004 Olympic trials, I ended up third. During that time in that process, was an assistant coach at the University of Pittsburgh first when I came out of college. Then I went to Oklahoma, went back to Oklahoma State in 2004 for the Olympic year, went to Harvard for 2 years, and then I got my first head job at Clarion, where I was head coach for 5 years, and then American University for 10 years. So, did I hit all the points?
Yeah, you hit that. I appreciate it, T.
You kind of hit on the university. I had written down some questions about how'd you get into wrestling, kind of talked about it, but something popped up listening to you talk about your sibling. There's a lot of T names there, except for your sister Colleen. Was there that intentionally done with your family? I just heard and thought it stuck in there while you were talking.
So I'll run through the list. There was Tim, Terry, Tom, Colleen, Tina, Ty, and Tig, right?
Yeah.
Not that wasn't a plan. My eldest brother, who's deceased now, Patrick Timothy, so my parents started calling him Tim by his middle name. And then they had Terrence Michael and then Daniel Thomas, so they called Tommy by his middle name. And then Maureen Colleen. So when Colleen came along, like, they were calling the boys by the T's, but it wasn't like they didn't think they were going to have seven kids at the time. And so they went with Maureen Colleen, and she was right in the middle. And she kind of balances out, right? She balances out the three older boys and then the three younger siblings, which was Tina Marie, Tynan Carey, and then me, Galen Teague. I'm also, I use my middle name, right? My first name's Galen, but
ever since
I was little. Yeah, everybody in Pittsburgh, so my family called me. They don't pronounce my name in Western Pennsylvania phonetically. Like, phonetically, my name is Teague, but in Pittsburgh, they say Tig, like T-I-G. Because if you hear them talk about sports, they'll say, like, the National Football League. Like, they pronounce it like L-I-G. And so my name became Tig, which immediately changed to Tigger. So for, like, the first 16 years of my life, everyone called me Tigger. And then when I started wrestling across the country, Sally Stevens was the first place I went to Cadet Nationals in Missouri, Columbia, Missouri. And she called me to the mat and she pronounced my name Teague Moore. I had never heard it said like that before. And I thought, oh, that was weird. But then I placed at the Cadet Nationals. And so as I started getting better at wrestling on a national level, everybody outside of Pennsylvania would call me Teague. But if they were from Pennsylvania, they would call me Tig. And if they were from Pittsburgh, they would call me Tigger. And so if somebody said my name like this, this happened for a long time. Like, I'd be walking through an airport somewhere, or I'd be somewhere in the country, right? And if somebody yelled my name, I can almost predict where they were from. You were either from Pittsburgh, the state of Pennsylvania, or you were outside of that area. So,
holy moly.
I pick up on the weirdest things, and I can't help it. That's kind of who I am. So you talked about the university, and then how did the university and your coach have an impact on you as a kid? And then how did that correlate into you as an adult and the impact it had on you?
So specifically, Coach Smith at Oklahoma State, he was, for me, extremely integral in keeping me on focused on the right things, right? I think, as most people are, I went to college at 19. My parents held me back because all of my older brothers struggled academically. So by the time I came along, they had a lot of practice and a lot of blueprints, and they said, this one we're holding back, right? Mm-hmm. Let's see if he can maybe hit the bar. And so by the time I graduated high school, I was 19, going off to Oklahoma State, and Coach Smith played a really good role for me. As I said earlier, my dad had passed away, and so Coach Smith kind of played that role of letting me know, like, hey, you got to correct from doing these things. Here's the way you're doing it. Probably not right. Not getting the results you want. You got to change it and do some other things. So I tell this story a lot. Coach did a really good thing for me at one point, because I was like a wild child when I went to college. I was just bonkers, hard to keep in bounds. And Coach said to me at one point, look, if you want to wrestle well when you go out and compete, you need to be clear of mind and your conscience needs to be cleared. Like, I would like you to go to confession before you go to competitions and make a good, solid confession. Because when I did that as an athlete, I always perform better. If Coach Smith tells you something like that, like,
you go and do it. You're on it.
You go and do it. And so that really helped me. When I was at Oklahoma State, specifically my sophomore to junior year, I was living off campus, and I was living with, there was an All-American runner at Oklahoma State, cross-country runner and a steeplechase runner, Chuck Sloan, my roommate. We started kind of doing this thing where we started going to church on weekday mornings. Like, if we didn't have morning workouts, so we'd go and do that. That was a really good practice for me, because it just kept me on an even kilter, mm-hmm. right? I'm Irish, and so once I hit 21 years old, like, I mean, without getting into too much detail, I always knew right when I was gonna black out, like, this isn't going good, like, I gotta get home, get to bed, right?
Hey, at least you knew that. Some people don't know that.
I had it. I think it's my DNA. My brain can always tell me, you've had enough. It's time to go rest. And I knew where I needed to beeline to where I was going to be in a good place. But with all that being said, like I said, I needed to be kicked in bounds quite a bit. I had Coach Smith really helping me from that aspect. And he did a great job of saying the sport of wrestling is really good for you. Because it's going to help you get your academics under control. It's going to help you make decisions in your day-to-day life, right? And I really feel like by the time I got to the end of the road at Oklahoma State, I was definitely a changed person. I was handling things much different. Of course, I was older, right?
Sure.
But I was handling things much different at 23 years old than I was in 19. And Coach had a lot to do that with that. Father Bob Schlitt had a lot to do with that. Some of my teammates had a lot to do with that, right? Hardell Moore and Steven Schmidt, these were guys that were really good about letting me know, like, hey, that was a bad choice. Don't do that again. Like, and
could be a boy. Could
not make that choice. Yeah.
Quit being so Irish. So that's what they're saying. Don't be so Irish.
Yeah.
Never all be that. I relate to that. With wrestling, was there a moment when you were competing and preparing and training so hard to be at the top of the game that you realized, hey, I'm pretty good at this? Or was it always, I am okay, but I'm going to outwork my competition and I'm going to be the guy that you don't beat because I'm the most prepared? Which was there, or was there a combination of the two for you?
I think it was a combination of the two. Like, being at Oklahoma State and seeing a list of Olympic gold medalists, list of NCAA champions, like, I always had the sense of, like, I want to be one of them. I want to have my name on the wall. I want to be remembered, right? But I never felt like I got there. I mean, even to this day, like, it feels good when somebody says, like, hey, you were a pretty good wrestler. Because in my mind, I think successful people tend to do this. And I'll say that now I can look at it and say, I had a successful wrestling career. But when I look back on it, like, I ended up third at the Olympic trials twice. I fell short of my goal of making an Olympic team, right? I fell short of being a multiple-time NCAA champion. I lost twice in the semifinals. My sophomore year, I lost to a guy I had beaten just a couple of weeks before from the University of Iowa, Jesse Whitmer, who had gone on to win the weight class that year. I'd beaten him leading up to it. In what I would say, like, in the duel, it was a pretty convincing win, but then I lose in the semis. My senior year, I lose to Stephen Abbas 3-3, right? Like, I was a returning NCAA champion, and as the year played out, he and I ended up hitting in the semifinals of a brutal match. I mean, just a back and forth. And he ended up winning on, like, an overtime ride out. And so when I look back on my career, I look back on the things that I didn't achieve that I really wanted to. But there was a point in time where I did look and say, okay, I'm pretty good at this. And I think I can go to the next level, right? Like, yes, I'm good at the NCAA level. I think I can do it at the world level. Kendall Cross did it. John Smith did it. Kenny Monday did it. They will put their shoes on in the same locker room that I was. And if they could go get their hand raised at the World Cup, at the World Championships, I think I can do that as well, right? So it was kind of just being in that environment and realizing I'm capable of doing it. But again, I never felt like I tell this story to kids that are going through it. Those national chips that I won throughout the process, I can't ever remember winning one and saying, like, yes, I did it. I'm on top. I always, like, won it. And I was like, what's next year going to look like?
Uh-huh.
Like, how, like, as soon as it was over, it was like, okay, I got to start putting my plan together because I know this guy's coming hard and I know this guy's doing really well. I got to be ready for that opponent. You know, this guy's winning tournaments over in Asia, or this Russian is really good, so I got to be prepared for him. So I never kind of, like, I look back on it, and there was never a time where I felt like I kicked my feet up and said, man, I'm here. I was always kind of looking at, like, what do I got to do next? I won the world championships in Tokyo in 2000. It was at that time, it was called the University World Games, University World Championships. I literally won the world championship, and Cale Sanderson won it, and I think two or three other Americans, we won it. I came home and I got married, like, within 20 days of that. So, like, I came home and immediately shifted gears because we were getting ready for a wedding. So I never even really, like, took the time to be like, yeah, I won a world championship. It was just, boom, get ready for the wedding. And then I was coaching at that time, so I was into the next thing for the team.
Looking at, you watched John coach throughout the years. And you trained under him, worked on as an assistant, went to OU, worked with Jack Spates. Going through that time, those two teams had some great wrestlers. I remember it. That's when Beth and I met. She was SID, as you know, at OU, and that's how we met. But talk about what you took from those two coaches when you started actually running your own program.
Yeah, they were, at that time, Oklahoma State was, you know, either winning national titles or they were second, third all the time. Like those, they were some top teams. While I was at OU with Jack, I think we were second, third. Yeah. I went back to OSU in 04, won first that year.
Yeah,
first then. So the things that I took away from it was Coach Smith, the way in which he ran the periodization of training, right? Like he was a stickler for technique and making sure that you had drilled it so many times. It wasn't that you just knew it, but you couldn't get it wrong, right? The reps were so high and knowing exactly where you need to be in what position and how you're going to finish it. And if the opponent does this, I'm ready to do that. And if the opponent does this position, then I'm ready to go there. Coach Spates, from a coaching standpoint, was an unbelievable recruiter. Like he could win over. Jack was absolutely phenomenal at reading a family. Within one phone call, he could say, "Mom is the decision maker. Dad's a huge wrestling fan, so we got to sell the history of OU wrestling. But Mom's going to make the decision for him. And so as we go through this process, this is how we're going to do that," right? And he had a whole song and dance. Like literally, coach could go into a living room and he would write a song about the guy he was recruiting and why they were going to be a national champion at Oklahoma, right? And I can remember, like, some people would laugh about it and they thought it was kind of corny, right? But I was kind of like, man, that's amazing that he can go in and win over the whole family in a 2-hour meeting, right? Mm-hmm. And so I would say the recruiting aspect from Jack and from Coach Smith, it was the technical side of coaching and how to develop the wrestler.
Mm-hmm. So as we talk about recruiting, today is Wednesday as we're recording this. It'll probably drop tomorrow, and so you'll have 2 days for those juniors. June 15th, big day. So as I get to my question, though, shortly after American, after that time period, we had a discussion and I asked you what you were doing at that time. And you told me about starting your own company called The Wrestling Consultant. Talk about that, The Wrestling Consultant, what you're doing now in relation to recruiting.
So the idea came up with, I had 20 years of coaching experience at the Division I level from all these different institutions, from big state schools to small private schools, scholarship, non-scholarship. And I knew that there are parents out there that have a lot of questions, but there's not a lot of places you can go to get the answers. And so I came up with the idea of The Wrestling Consultant so that parents or high school wrestlers that are about to go on this recruiting journey have somebody in their corner to ask the right questions, right? I knew with all my years of coaching, the number one biggest aspect of why guys transferred out of programs almost always was the culture fit. It was either they chose a school or a program that was just not a good fit for them. They didn't understand the culture of that team or the culture of that coach and what was going to be asked of them. And so they get homesick and they wanted to return home. And so a lot of times when I talk to parents, like my goal for them is that in this process that they're going to go through of talking to coaches and seeing what campuses are like, find that school that when you pick it, you're going to stay there to get your undergrad degree, maybe a master's degree, and be able to be with that coach for the length of your program, right? Now, that was just a few years ago. And the landscape has already changed because of NLI and these things that are happening now. And so that was my idea, is like, be a resource for these parents and these kids that have questions. Sometimes they just feel so awkward asking the coach that is recruiting them, hey, when do I have to make a decision by? Like, what's the timeline? When do I have to know if I'm doing, you know, ED for my decision? If you're looking at Ivy League schools or Patriot League schools, high academic schools, when do you got to have your application in by? What's the deadline for you as a coach that you want to hear from me that I'm going to verbally commit, right? And so by starting the wrestling consultant, I was able to give back on all these experiences that I had, like Clarion in Pennsylvania time, it was like 5,500 students, maybe 6,000 students, right? Compared to an Oklahoma State with 35,000 students in a state school, right? And so being able to navigate those conversations and let the wrestlers know, hey, this is what you're thinking about going to this program. This is what it's going to be like wrestling for that coach. That's what this coach is really focused on, these things and trying to get guys down that path. I like to always use the example. Most wrestling people know the University of Iowa, Tom Brands, and they know of Kale Sanderson at Penn State. Not every wrestler is built for those two programs, but there are wrestlers that are absolutely going to excel in a Penn State environment, and there are wrestlers that are going to excel in an Iowa environment. So that being like the biggest example that everybody can understand, how do you navigate that process when you're looking at maybe some of these small state schools or private schools? How do you find the right place and the right fit for you? And that's what I do with my clients, is to try to help them weed out those questions and find that coach that they're going to be happy with for 5 years.
Right. When you get a call from a parent, what's that process look like? Do you sit down and you say, hey, this is what we're going to discuss. This is that process of what you just described. Do you get to know those kids, the athletes that are going through that recruiting process? Talk about a little bit about that.
Yeah. So when people reach out to me, I always do a free introductory call so I can learn about the family, find out what they're looking for. Because there are some instances when they say, coach, we're looking for X, Y, and Z. And if it's just not my, like nowadays, some parents are reaching out and they're like, hey, we need help with NLI. We want to make sure he's getting a package. I don't do that. Right.
Yeah.
Like I'm not going
to. You're not the NIL broker.
Yeah. I'm not going down that path to like try and get you a sandwich deal in town or a shoe deal or a car deal. I'm not there. But where I am at is the family that says, mom and dad say, we never wrestled. We didn't even know about this sport until our son or our daughter fell in love with it. And now it's all they want to do. And they're telling us they want to wrestle in college. We have no idea what's going on, right? If you're a male wrestler right now, you've got about 450 programs throughout the country. Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA, junior colleges, right? And then you've got, like, if you're West Coast, you've got the California junior colleges, yeah, which are different than the NJCAA junior colleges. So there's even its own little, they got their own season outside the regular college season. And so there's this huge pool that when you say to parents, well, if you're going to look Division I, okay, he's got, you know, essentially 80 programs that he's going to start to navigate. And what's he want to study? Oh, he's looking at engineering. Okay, you've got about 13 or 14 programs that you can look at now. He doesn't want to go to an academy. Okay, he's got 9 programs to look at now, right? Yeah. So helping them understand the wide swath of potential places they can go and start to narrow that down, right? Like I heard a head coach, I'm not going to say his name, but I heard a head coach like a year ago. And I don't know if it was because he saw what I was doing or he had somebody else. There's other services out there that they call themselves like recruiting services. And this head coach was like, nobody needs a recruiting service. Just email the coach and find out who you want to email. And I felt like saying to him, oh, what coaches should they email? There's 453 coaches, head coaches they should email? Should they start building that list right now and get all, should they email any of the assistant coaches, right? Should they be emailing junior colleges right now if they have a 3.9 GPA and an 1150 SAT, right? So I only say that kind of like tongue in cheek, because the reality is, even if you're a wrestling dad and you wrestled in college, I can guarantee you, if you start breaking down all the programs just at the Division I level, every wrestler is going to have a choice of like 8 or 10 schools to take a look at. If you're going maybe Division II, you don't want a full 24/7 commitment lifestyle of wrestling, but you want to be on a team and you want to be able to study a certain fields, maybe you're looking at D2 or D3. So how do you find out what schools are out there? How do you get in touch with those coaches? What should you put in front of the coaches? Is there too much information to tell coaches when you reach out, right? And so that's what we work on.
So to me, and Beth has always said this, and I believe her because she's my wife, and you've met my wife, you know Beth. I believe pretty much and trust everything that she says, right? So
that's
she...
Awesome. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I know. It is, right? So we've talked in nauseam because, you know, Dixie's 12 years old. She's really good at gymnastics. She's coming in on her own. She's doing awesome. But we see these young kids with their social media. With social media pages that they may have, one for recruiting, one for their personal. But we firmly believe all those coaches are looking at both their personal and their recruiting pages, specific to gymnastics as well, just because that's our world. But we know a lot in wrestling as well. But do you advise at all on these kids and what they post on their social medias? Because those college coaches are looking at it.
100%. You'd be naive to say it doesn't matter, right? Yeah. And look, if you're a college coach and you're not doing some background check, you know, to make sure, there's some things that I don't want to bring into my program. As a college coach, you should absolutely be doing that check on those kids, because let's face it, the day you wake up and your athletic director says, your athlete posted this, what is going on? As a college coach, you better know kind of, is there a history in this? Was it an accident? Did somebody grab their phone in a party and post something that shouldn't have been, right? You want to be able to go in and say, I don't know what happened, but this is not my athlete. They would normally not do something like this, say something like that, or put something out there. Now, high school athlete, here's the dilemma that we face. We've got a culture that is social media is a massive part of these kids' lives. Whether we like it or not as parents, whether we like it or not as a culture, social media is the elephant in the room, right? So I think the easy conversation to have, or at least I have with these high school athletes, is look, if you're ever going to post anything that you wouldn't post with your mom and dad standing there, or, you know, whoever most trusted in your life is, if you would feel awkward posting it if they were standing right there, there's your answer. Don't post it. Right?
Right.
Because the reality is, once it goes out there, it can never be erased.
Nope.
It can never be erased. It's out there. Right? So here, hey, let's face facts. Nobody really cares about all the things that you're doing in your life. I know nobody cares about the things I'm doing in my life, right?
Right.
So why tell the world about it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the philosophy to go with. Look, just use social media for what it's for. It's a form of entertainment. Use it to your advantage when you can, but be smart with what you're doing, because it can and will change the trajectory of your future, whether you like it or not.
Sure.
Very true.
Now,
I'm so glad we didn't have social media growing up.
Right.
Not exactly. Me. I was an angel. I would have would have gotten a lot of reels of me cleaning my halo and shining it to perfection.
It's not like you got a lot of good practice.
There's some deer nearby. Yeah. Or Jameson.
Coach Smith was telling me we need to go to confession. It sounds like things were going really well all the time.
Yeah,
he's asking right. me to go to confession to clear his mind. Yeah. But everything lines up very perfectly there for what he was saying.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
When Father Bob Schlitt was saying, "Teague, I haven't seen you in, a little while. Do you want to stop in and do a confession this week?" When your college priest is telling you that, then you probably thank God there was no social media.
No, Ken, I agree. That is true. Now, your experience is on the college coaching level, what you do can translate to other sports too. So if you have like Wes, his son, basketball player. So if he continues to progress, he could call you for your services for his son or for gymnastics. Right?
It is transferable. What I do, I feel, is unique to wrestling just because I know all these guys. Yeah. I know that the guys that are coaching the programs, right? And I can intimately answer questions about what's happening with those things. With what I do, I could maybe advise on how to, what questions should be asked, how to communicate with the coaches in terms of other sports. I think if I were to ever branch out or, scale this thing, I would have to go find a coach that was coaching cross country for 15 years. Coaching basketball for a decade. So they had those intimate answers within that sport, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why I have done what I've done. I just stick with the wheelhouse that I know. I solely stick with coaching. I've done some things with athletes in other sports because, just like you mentioned, like the mom and dad were really happy about it, but they had a friend in the school that the parents had questions and couldn't get some of them answered. They were super easy, right? It was like timeline stuff. When should we be looking to get applications started? How do we reach out to the coach? Is there too much information that we can send and those sort of things? So I've done that, but I don't feel equipped enough to scale what I'm doing into other sports and say, hey, I'm now the expert in cross country or field hockey or lacrosse or the 43 other sports there are.
What would you say the most rewarding part of what you do is? Like, where do you find ways that fill you up?
It is so awesome when you get started with a high schooler that is very unsure of themselves and or what their future is going to look like. And then you get to that point where they call you and they say, Coach, I made my commitment. I told the other schools and coaches that I was making my decision. And then I just got off the phone with Coach and I told him I'm committed and that's where I'm going to be for college. That is so fulfilling to have just helped them navigate that path, right? I never share clients' names or their information, but like this year, one athlete who I've been working with for about a year is going to be able to go to one of the Ivy League schools. And it was like a dream, right? It was like when we first started talking about it, he kind of said it like tongue in cheek, like, well, I'd like to wrestle there, but right. And it was kind of like, well, but what? Like, why can't you? You're just as good as the guys they have on the team now. They had similar success when they were your age. So why is that different? And then over time, it kind of morphed to where he was getting to the point where he was like, I'm talking to this coach, and this coach, within the Ivies, and they all feel confident. But I really am gravitating towards this coach. And I really feel that's where I'm going to be best in the future. And so when that day comes and he says, Coach, I did it. I made my commitment. These are the next steps that we're going to be taking. It is so fulfilling to know that they feel really good about their decision. And especially in an age when we're seeing the most transfers that we've ever seen in college sports, it's mind-boggling when you hear the numbers of athletes that are in the portal to leave the school that they just said 12 months ago, 24 months ago, it was their dream to be there. And then in 12 months, suddenly it's the wrong place to be, right? And we're talking tens of thousands of athletes in the NCAA that are in these transfer portals. So to hear from kids that are making that decision and feel like they've dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's, they really feel confident about where they're going and the coach they're going to be with. It feels absolutely phenomenal.
You brought up the transfer portal and what's going on there. And it's become very, I guess the right word is rampant within college athletics. Personally, how do you feel the culture has changed to facilitate this? I mean, when my dad went to college, or even I went to college, I didn't play college sports, but he did. He couldn't just decide, hey, I don't like this, I'm gonna go somewhere else. There were kind of consequences and repercussions for deciding that you didn't want to play there anymore. How do you feel? Is it a cultural thing? Is it the empowerment of the athlete? What do you feel has led to this moment?
One, when they loosened the rules like they did, and you hit the nail on the head. There's no consequences for choosing to leave. Everybody equated this. So like all the attorneys that were involved with this and were pushing it the way they were pushing it, you kept hearing, well, the coach can pick up and leave and go wherever he wants at any time, right? Why can't the athlete do that? And my thought on it was, okay, what if they're for the athletes? Let's just go back. So this is like my opinion. This is a full circle. If you go back in time in the NCAA, there was a time when you could transfer and wrestle at another school with no consequences. Well, the NCAA saw that it was folly and it wasn't good for the student athlete academics, number one. And so that was them kind of pumping the brakes with it. Well, through the late 70s, early 80s, things started shifting and changing. And then you had athletes that there were consequences. If you transferred, you had to sit a year, mandatory sit a year, right? I think if we just implemented that one rule, yes, you can transfer wherever you want, but there's a mandatory sit for 1 year. Even if you get all your years of eligibility, you couldn't compete the next year you go. I guarantee we would see the transfer rate drop off a cliff. It would go down by like 60% or 70% of people entering the portal just by saying that. If you transfer, you're going to sit. And you'll get all your years of eligibility after that, but you're going to have to sit 1 year. I think we would drastically see a change, right? That's number one. Number two, maybe we're going to see a shift. We have to watch this whole cycle kind of play out. But I think the franchise athlete in college sports is going to come back. Like, I think there's going to be, after we go through this chaotic mess, I think we'll see a time where they say, I want to be a Cowboy for my whole year, my whole career, right? Mm-hmm. I do think there's going to come a time. Right now, it's real wishy-washy. Like, I feel like the student athletes aren't committed to their coaches or their college programs because right now there's enticement to leave and the grass is going to be greener somewhere else. Well, I think that's going to shift here in a few years, right? Yeah. I'm fearful of how many people are losing the education. I know for me, for Teague Moore and the Moore family, my mom and dad never went to college. My dad didn't even finish high school, right? And they preached to us when we grew up, you're doing this, you're wrestling so you can get your education. I can remember my dad being adamant about it, right? Like, I remember him saying to my brother, Ty, who was a four-time Pennsylvania state champion, and like, Ty probably should have been at a different program than what he chose to go to in college for various reasons, right? But my dad was adamant the whole time. When Ty started slipping as a wrestler, my dad said, I don't care. I don't care if you never get your hand raised again. Get your college degree. Same thing he said to me. Same thing he said to my sister. Get your college degree. It will change your life. Your mother and I never got that chance. We want that for you, for your kids. Well, now I'm seeing all these kids transfer and go. Now there's even athletes going multiple schools, right? Yeah. My question comes back to, okay, even if you're leaving with a piece of paper that says degree, are you truly getting an education through this process?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think we've missed out, right?
There's a reason it says student athlete. Student is first.
Yeah.
I mean,
let's be honest. Of the percentage that go to college and play a sport, how many are going to make their next 30 or 40 years because of that little bit of time with that sport in college? Or is the next 30 or 40 years going to be because of the field of work that they go into based on their education that they get during that time?
Right.
I think we would all agree, like, it's overwhelming in the high 90 percentiles. You're going to do something else. I feel like I was a rare commodity because I went into coaching and that was my profession for 20 years, two decades. I feel like that was very rare, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now I hope that the kids that are going through the process value the education because that is what's going to carry them through their latter years, right?
Yeah. The idea behind college is to go learn and to make connections and friendships that last you a lifetime. I mean, you see it so many times that you build these deep and meaningful relationships at that university, whether it's a large university or small university, that will have lasting impact on your life.
Amen.
And it's hard to get that if you're leaving every other year to go somewhere else because the coach was mean to you or not. And I say that in tongue in cheek because there are times there are cultural disconnections that go on where student athletes don't mesh well with the coaching staff and it wasn't what they thought it was going to be. And, you know, if that's the case, that's a good idea to leave because it doesn't fit. And they're not going to get the best out of you and you're not going to get the best out of them, become what you possibly could be. As we mentioned, I think that's the rarity. I think you kind of see who the coach is with all the social media that's available and the information that's available today, that they can get a good picture of who that person is, both privately and publicly to make an informed decision.
Totally agreed, right? Agreed. And that's why you got to do your homework.
Yeah.
To go and pick a school because you went and had a good official visit weekend and there were a lot of bells and whistles. Well, there's 363 other days, you know, comparatively your 48 hours on campus. Yeah. There's another 363 days that you're going to have to be there and going through life, right? So you got to make sure that's a good fit for you.
I mean, absolutely. You see it with like Nick Saban. You see him just screaming at people, but people flock there because you know what? It sounds like he's pretty transparent of what he expects of you and what he's going to get out of you and what his expectations are while you're there. And if you can't live with that, he didn't want you there. Like, go somewhere else. I don't need you. Like, I want to win, but we're going to win my way. And I know I can do it. I can show you I can do it. And I've got enough skins on the wall of people playing with on Sundays and Mondays that you want to come here and play.
Yeah, I think there's enough people that have publicly said, he changed my life. Yes, he yelled at me, but it did the right thing for me at the right time, right?
Yeah.
And to be willing to be open to that critique or those criticisms. And I always look at it like this. If you can jump on the internet and see guys that played for Saban and how well they speak of him. If those guys are saying that, how many are not saying it, right? There's probably thousands that have said he was an integral role in making me into who I am today, whether they're like, you know, they're running a car dealership or they're, you know, leading a company. I guarantee you, they say my time with him and what he taught me how to get through tough times. Like, I look at Coach Smith and like my tough times in college or my tough times in my international career that he was with me. I feel the tough times that I've had in life. I have four kids. Anybody that's raised kids, you can go through some tough times, right? I look back on those tough times that I went through in college and he definitely prepared me for life. And if there's something that my kids do moving forward, I want them to have a coach. I want them to have somebody in their life that's going to prepare them for the tough times ahead. Because we can almost all be guaranteed of one thing. Life's going to be hard at some point.
Yeah, right? That is true.
No doubt. Well, the thing is, it prepares you for the real world because we're going to have a boss that's going to yell at us. And if you can't handle that, you're not going to make it in your profession because people are going to get mad at you and people are going to yell at you. I had a client that he looked for athletes to hire. The reason is he knew that they were going to go out and most of them. He goes, I didn't want the guy that was really, really good that didn't work very hard. I wanted the guy that was the guy that worked his tail off and got on the team and then made the team and stayed on the team because he outworked everybody because he understands what it's like to grind and how to work hard. And he's going to be successful because he doesn't know how to quit. And people who don't know how to quit are the ones that can make the world go round.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Going Absolutely. On that note that Wes just said, the title of our podcast is When Hard Work Beats Talent. And Wes just said, gave a story on what his client looks for when hiring people. You're talented, but what? Then what? You know, does your hard work match that? Talk about that philosophy from your viewpoint of when hard work beats talent. When you were coaching, recruiting, working with these kids, what do you tell them about that process and about moving on to the rest of their life?
Yeah, in the recruiting, I always talked about, so I'll just talk about my time at American University. This was pre-COVID, right? I had more wrestlers wrestling for me that were earning graduate degrees than any Division I in the country. Because when I went and recruited them, I said, you're going to wrestle for us for 5 years at American University. I want you to get your undergrad in 3, and I can show you all these examples of guys that did it. And then we're going to get your master's in 2 years, right? And parents love this idea. They love the idea of, okay, he's got 5 years to wrestle, 4 with his eligibility, 1 red shirt. And you've got a clear path that you're going to put them on that's going to get them to this finish line in 5 years. Now, here was the beauty of it. I would say to them, I will guarantee you, when you go to your first job interview and that employer sees that all of the applications were in college and they have college degrees, but you went and got your college degree while also competing in Division I athletics, wrestling. And then if they know even a little bit about the sport, not only were you training and competing, you were also managing your weight. You were also competing outside of the season in the Olympic styles throughout the summer. If you can tell that story in your job interview, I guarantee that your resume floats to the top. And it may not be number one, but it's going to be probably top 3 in those interviews. And what I loved is when my alumni could come back and talk to recruits and their families and say, here's what I did. And when I was graduating from American with my master's, I already had a signed contract to start work in 30 days post-graduation, right? So we had a proven track record that you did your time on the mats in the classroom, and it puts you in a much different place as soon as you were done with school. There were not a lot of coaches, I think, that told that story in the recruiting process, right? Now with the kids that I'm consulting, my thing to them is embrace the hard work of wrestling. Embrace like the uncomfortable state it's going to put you in physically with your wrestling, your strength training, your conditioning, your weight management, all these things. Embrace that discomfort. Because when you move forward in life and your boss is saying you've got to get this project done, at the same time, you've got to stay within budget that we're working, we've got to get this completed for this client, that employer wants to know that when they give you the walking orders, you know how to achieve a goal. You know when you have to do extra hard work to get that done. I think every generation does this, but I don't know that the generation now that we have coming through embraces hard physical labor. And I do think, I know the vast majority of successful people that I've been around that own businesses and have done really good things, at some point in time, their job becomes hard and physical. I don't care if you're a salesperson. If you're out on the road day to day and you're banging on doors to get it done, it becomes physical at some point, and you got to be able to tough through that, right?
Nice.
Not that you have to do it all the time. You'll drive yourself crazy and burn yourself out, but you've got to be able to embrace it and do it. College athletics prepares you for that. Not just wrestling. College athletics prepares you for that. And hopefully, when the day comes that you're going through the application process, you can sell that story to your new employer. When the going gets tough, I'm going to be there for you, and I'm going to be there for this company. I think most employers would say, I want that person.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally agree.
Great stuff.
I 100% agree with you, Teague. And I think it bodes well, and it speaks volumes to those coaches themselves to identify talent, to identify hard workers. Because we've talked about it in nauseam, the UC athletes, high school athletes all the time that has a ton of talent, high school and college. But you also see them practice and they're just lazy. They just have God-given talent, but if they ever applied themselves, then they'd be top recruited in the nation or just unbeatable. It goes in all sports as well as, I think, in life as well. When is a time that you've seen an athlete just not apply themselves, but they had so much God-given talent, and you're thinking, oh my goodness, if this guy just applied himself,
yeah,
they'd be unstoppable?
You know, I won't say names, but there were a number of times in my coaching career where you saw a guy that had the ability to be a national champion, right? But having gone down that path myself, you knew that the talent only got you so far. And then there's grit, there's determination, there's the willingness to do the things that the average person won't do. And quite frankly, sometimes you could talk until you're blue in the face and the person just doesn't want to do it. Like, they just had the talent that was going to get them so far, but, you know, for whatever reason, whatever excuse, they weren't going to be able to push through to that last little bit to succeed. I will say this, I've seen so many more that succeeded because they had that ingredient that they could battle through tough situations, whether it be bad calls, right? Maybe a bad performance that would shut most people down. They found a way to get back up and push themselves harder. And that was across the boards. I saw it in runners. I saw it in soccer players. I saw it in field hockey players. I saw it in lacrosse players. They just had a grit and determination that they were going to get it done. I think the... I know as a coach, whether I was at a place like with a John Smith or a Jack Spades at the big schools, or I was at a little school, the coaches that could, in the recruiting process, find that in their recruits, those were the ones that always put together championship teams, right? Because they could, in a two-hour family visit, they heard and saw things that they said, this dad, like, if this kid's not doing it right, this dad's going to put a foot somewhere that young man is going to figure out what work needs to be done, right?
Yeah.
Or you'd come out of a living room meeting, and I can remember a visit where we came out of a living room meeting, and Jack Spates was like, well, that's great. I love this guy. We got to get him. You know why? Because if he misses a practice, his mom's going to come to Norman, and he's never going to miss a practice after that again. That's a mom that we need, right? And so the coaches that could read that in the recruiting process and know that that athlete was going to be pushed not just by their coaching staff.
Sure.
They were going to be getting pushed from home in the right ways to make the right decisions, to do the right things, you know? I can remember when my dad passed and Coach Smith and I went through a couple of hard times in that season. And I can remember Coach saying, you know why we recruited you is I met your family. And he was from a big Catholic family, 10 kids. I was from a big Catholic family of 7 kids. And he said, you know, in our families, you got to battle if you want food at dinner. You've got to be willing to fight for those things, right? You got to be willing to fight for the little things. And that's why you're going to get through this. That's why you're going to figure that out. And that's why you're going to succeed. You've been doing it your whole life. This is no different, right? Right now, you might be knocked down because you lost a match or you didn't finish where you wanted to finish in this tournament. But you just remember, this is what we do, and we find ways to succeed, right? And so I think there's coaches out there that can, they can see that.
That's good stuff. The overarching thing is they hate losing more than they like winning. That's, it just seems like that's the ones you're looking for. Just understand that, listen, I just don't want to lose. I expect to win. I'm going to put the hard work in to get there. I'm going to do everything I have to do on my end. And I'm just going to embrace, like you said, embrace the discomfort of it all and just be better.
I like saying embrace the suck.
Same difference.
Same thing.
I always found it interesting in recruiting when you'd find a kid who was good, like they had won state titles or national titles, and you would start to ask them about past performances, and they would get upset, and they would say like, oh yeah, I won states this year at this weight, but last year this guy beat me in, you know, at this tournament or at this place. And they would go in depth on the loss that they had, right? They could care less about telling you about their state championship or the national championship match. They would skip right over it to tell you why they were gunning for this guy that beat them in the past. That's a guy that you're like, okay, this is going to be an easy one to coach. Yeah, it's going to be an easy one to work with.
Yeah. What is with you know, and on Saturday, June 15th, coming up with recruiting, what is one or two pieces of advice that you would tell any recruitable athlete out there about this weekend and that process?
Well, what I say to the kids that I work with, June 15th, just so our listeners know, June 15th is important because if you're coming out of your sophomore year's finished, you're heading into your junior year, June 15th is when you can officially be recruited by the college coaches, specifically in the sport of wrestling, right? They most all follow the same calendar, but there are some other sports on a different calendar. But June 15th is important for wrestlers because the college coach can now reach out to you, make full contact, get you on campus. Like, it all begins June 15th in between that junior, that sophomore and junior year. Here's why. Well, what I say to the wrestlers I'm working with, if you think that your phone's going to ring on June 15th, and that's the first time that the coach is going to be reaching out or that you have been in contact with that coach, you're fooling yourself. You should have put yourself in front. You can email a college coach at any time. They just can't respond to it before June 15th, right? Mm-hmm. They're lining up their prospect camps. A coach can talk to you about their prospect camps prior to June 15th. They can give you information on their camp systems prior to June 15th. So the work should have already been done. Now, right, if you've done the work, when June 15th comes along, great. Now you can really open up and have those full conversations and say, coach, this is where I want to be. Or I've done my homework on your team. I see that you have, you know, 2 athletes at my weight class, and you got another one that is signed to come in that's in the same area. How am I going to fit into that role? Like, if you've done your homework, you can have that great conversation on June 15th and really hit the ground running. You don't want to wait till June 15th to that be the first time that the coach is hearing from you. And let's face facts. The vast majority of high school athletes, the coaches probably aren't going to know your name and they're not going to know your results. You've got to get it to the coach. Yes, there are some coaches out there, athletes out there that are on social media and they've had big wins and college coaches know them and they're going to be coming after them to recruit them. But like, there was a great example on Flow Wrestling last year. They did this like big, one of the biggest names in high school wrestling. They were going to be there June 15th. What was it going to be like? June 15th came and it was like silence. This is like one of the top premier kids in the country. And they're kind of like, this was supposed to be better than it was. But the reality is, like, the coaches that had already done their homework, they kind of knew if they were in the hunt on that recruiting path or not, right? And so as the program played out, like, the coaches started making their outreach. It just wasn't at the exact moment that they thought it was going to happen.
Right.
So, and any student athlete out there, my advice to you would be this. You've got to do the homework to know where you want to go. Don't think that all these college coaches are going to come chasing you down. You've got to handle it like this is a big decision for you. So do your homework. Know what the coach is about. Know what the school is about. Know what the athletic department is about. Look at their graduating classes. If they bring in 15 new guys every year, but on senior day, they're giving away 2 awards, that should say something, right? So do your homework. And parents can do the homework as well. Look at the social media of the team, of the coach. See what type of stuff they're putting out there.
Is it advisable for kids, you know, let's say freshmen, sophomores, eighth graders, to go to camps of, if they identify 5 or 6 different colleges that they want to go to, no matter what sport, all sports colleges typically have camps of some sort. Is that a place where they can also go and start that process as well?
Yeah, I call it building the relationship. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. If I were doing this all over again, I would be willing to bet that my dad would say, okay, where are the schools that you want to go? I only took 3 visits. I took 2 visits. I was looking at Penn State, Cornell, and Oklahoma State. This is 1994, right?
Mm-hmm.
I took my visit to Penn State. I took my visit to Oklahoma State. I came home and called Cornell and said, I'm making my decision to go to Oklahoma State, right? If fast forward, if we were there today, now, mind you, that was my junior year going into my senior year. Now everything happens earlier. I could guarantee you my dad would have said, let's look at 5 schools that you're serious about, and I want you to go to camp to meet them, mm-hmm. right? Because you're going to start to build a relationship with that coach. You're going to start to realize this is how they teach. This is
right.
Their expectations of me. These are things they hold in high regard in their program, right? Some coaches are going to say, hey, you got to be in the strength and conditioning room doing extra stuff. And some coaches are going to say, hey, I want you watching video or trying to get reps on these things. You start to learn that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I think it's hugely important for kids going through the process to get on the campus, meet the coach, shake their hands, watch them in a practice, watch them coach their team. If you can get in and watch that coach interact with his current student athletes, man, that will tell you a lot about it.
What other ways people can connect with you? Are you on LinkedIn, social, other socials, your website?
Yeah, a website, thewrestlingconsultant.com. They can email me out of the blue, thewrestlingconsultant@gmail.com. My phone numbers are on there. Any parent or coach that's interested or would like to learn more about what I do or their specific situation, they can set up a free intro call. If you go to my website, there's a Calendly app on there. You can just sign up for the free call and gives us time to fits with your schedule, fix with my schedule. And then I do all of it. This isn't even what I do full time, just so everybody knows. I work for Advantage Sport and Fitness, an old wrestling coach, John Murray. He was the old Ithaca head coach. There's probably 10 of us that were Division I wrestlers that work sales for Coach Murray. I build strength and conditioning rooms around the DC metro area. My consulting is something I do on the weekends and in the evenings on the side. And so my full-time job is building strength and conditioning rooms. And then the consulting is a way that I can stay connected with wrestling. It's mm-hmm. like, if you know any old wrestlers, it's really hard for us to get away from the sport. So the way that I scratch my itch
right.
is, yeah, there's always like, and anybody I know that was in it, they coach at a club, they coach their local youth team, they help out with the high school team. For me, I do consulting, right? So I get to talk to kids that are in the mix, I talk with parents that are, you know, working with the college coaches and interacting with the college coaches. Gives me an opportunity to stay involved with the sport, but I don't want to be back in it 24/7 like I was for 20 years.
But she still got to come out to Reno and hang out with us. There's a plenty of prospects out there for you, buddy.
Plenty of prospects, and there's always a good pool of coaches that are out there. Guys that I know or wrestled with, so I'm going to have to put that one on the calendar.
Come on out,
December,
man.
December
20th. This year, December 20th through the 22nd. Actually, okay. You would want to do the 20th through the 21st. 22nd is the college open. You don't care about that. You can watch, hang out with us. Come hang out with me.
Yeah, that's Beth exactly and what I do.
Yeah.
I would like to see the high school tournament to, you know, see the kids that are competing. You always have a ton of teams that are out there. So
you can see it for our teammates.
Yep. At Reno, there always seems to be a lot of old Cowboys that are coaching. So I get to see those guys. And now that I'm on the sidelines, I can cheer for all of them.
Yes, you can. Well, Teague, we appreciate the time, my man.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, thank you, guys. I greatly appreciate it. And I love what you guys are doing. I think a podcast like this is going to help a lot of people in a lot of different ways. And, you know, life is about getting through tough times, right? Because if all of our lives were simple and easy, I don't think you'd have many good memories, right?
Right.
But the fact that we've all battled through something and we had to deal with things that we didn't choose, but we figure out how to deal with it and move forward. That's what it's all about. So I wish you guys the best to grow this podcast and let me know how I can help moving forward.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dave. We appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.